Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Josiah Rich, and this morning our show is entitled Job, Prophet of Existential Realism and the Freedom of God. I know that that title is a mouthful, but I think today's show and our topic, that title will be understood in depth. We are going to be talking about Job, or in Hebrew, Yob, and his life is of great importance for us because of what his life tells us about faith, about trust, about the love of God. And moreover, we're going to be dealing with theodicy. And theodicy is a term that deals with justice of God in the light of human suffering. And with that, we shall be looking, we shall also be looking to another huge topic in the book of Job, and that is the freedom of Yahweh. So we're going to look at some a powerful tension, as it were, and two things that we as human beings hold in tension. That is human suffering and with relationship to theodicy. That is, the once again, the justice of God in the light of human suffering and the freedom of God. So we see these twin elements held in tension in the book of. The literary structure is at once both complex and simple. It's simply the structure of Job is prose, and for the great bulk of the book, poetry, and then the end of the book, once again, we have prose. So prose, poetry, and prose once again. Oh, Job is not the author of the book of Job. And so we do not know the name of the author. There are two dates involved here. There is the date of the man Job in his historical setting and the date of the inspired writer who composed the book. And so there are those who believe that the latter could be dated anytime from the reign of Solomon to the exile. And although the writer was an Israelite, he mentions nothing of Israelite history. He had written, an oracle account about the non-Israelite sage Job, whose settings appear to be during the second millennium BC, that is between 2000 and 1000, and probably late in that millennium. The language of Job is very bold, and Job is the language that is used in the book of Job is very interesting because it shows a combination of different Semitic languages. For instance, we have there is Aramaic, and then there is Hebrew. Before these two became separated, as it were, into families. So it is very interesting. Also, another important element of the book of Job is the presentation of the adversary. And he is called Ho-Satan, the Satan, the adversary, the one who opposes. And one person has written that the author portrays the adversary in his boldest and most radical assault on God and the godly man in the special and intimate relationship that is dearest to them both. When God calls upon the name of Job before the accuser and testifies to the righteousness of this one on the earth, this man in whom God delights, Satan attempts with one crafty thrust both to assail God's beloved and to show up God as a fool. And so, true to one of his modes of operation, he accuses Job before God. He charges that Job's godliness is evil. The very godliness in which God takes delight is void of all integrity. It is the worst of all sin. Job's godliness is self-serving. He is righteous only because it pays. If God will only let Satan tempt Job by breaking the link between righteousness and blessing, he will expose the righteous man for the sinner he is. It is the adversary's ultimate challenge. For if the godliness of the righteous man in whom God delights can be shown to be the worst of all sins, then a chasm of alienation stands between them that cannot be bridged. And so this is why we titled the show, or I titled the show, Job, Prophet of Existential Realism. Then even redemption is unthinkable, for the godliest of men will be shown to be the most ungodly. God's whole enterprise in creation and redemption will be shown to be radically flawed. And God can only sweep it all away in awful judgment. The accusation, once raised, cannot be removed, not even by destroying the accuser. So God lets the adversary have his way with Job within specific limits, so that God and the righteous Job may be vindicated and the great accuser silenced. Thus comes the anguish of Job, robbed of every sign of God's favor, so that God becomes for him the great enigma. Also, his righteousness is assailed on earth through the logic of the orthodox theology of his friends. Alone he agonizes. But he knows in his heart that his godliness has been authentic, and that someday he will be vindicated, chapter 13, verse 18. And in spite of all, though he may curse the day of his birth, chapter 3, and chide God for treating him unjustly, chapter 9, verses 28 through 35, the uncalculated outcry out of the distraught spirit, he will not curse God as his wife, the human, who is nearest to his heart, proposes in chapter 2, verse 9. In fact, what pains him most is God's apparent alienation from him. In the end, however, the adversary is silenced, and the astute theologians, that is, Job's friends, are silent, and Job, too, is silenced. But God is not. And when he speaks, it is to Job that he speaks, bringing the silence of regret for hasty speech in days of suffering and the silence of repose in the ways of the Almighty. Chapter 38, verse 1, 42, verse 10. Furthermore, as his heavenly friend God hears Job's intercessions for his associates, chapter 42, verse 8 and 10, and he restores Job's beatitude. What is immediately important for us about Job, of course, is, once again, is this topic. This, and once again, it is the oldest book in the Bible. It is, this book is older than the book of Genesis. What we are going to take a look at in Job is the fact that in the Hebrew mind, righteousness is what one does, not what one talks about and fails to produce. In the Hebrew mind, righteousness or rightness is what one does, not what one talks about and fails to practice. In other words, in the Hebrew mind, righteousness is concrete activity. It is unlike Greek or Western thinking, dominated by cognitive involvement, intellectual debate. The mind that seeks to understand life and the world, just syllogism of logic. Very unlike Western Greek thinking, of which we have been both the benefactors and the victims, as it were. But it is the very concrete nature of the Hebrew understanding that dominates Job. And there are three encounters in the book. We have Job and Satan, chapters 1 and 2, and the encounter between Job and his friends, chapters 3 through verse 7, and then the encounter between Job and God, chapters 38 through 42. There's a very powerful picture of God presented in chapter 1. And the cunning, the adroitness, the supernatural intelligence of the adversary is presented in a manner that is amazing and takes one aback. In Genesis chapter 3, the enemy is introduced as the Nakash, as the shining one. And in Hebrew, it seems as if Genesis chapter 3 are coming in on a conversation. Not so much a conversation in the traditional sense, but here we have the Isha who is attempting or to answer the unanswerable question that has been posed to her by the Nakash, by the Shining One. And this is just chapter 3 is, as it were, a conversation about God. About God. And she, we read it, 2 Corinthians, Paul writes in chapter 11 that the woman was completely and thoroughly deceived. She attempted to answer questions, but she was ill-equipped. And even in the temptation of Jesus, there were questions posed to him, statements made to him. And he adroitly used the word of God, understanding that it was the devil or the one who divides. And so he knew how to address this great being. We're going to see something very interesting in Job chapter about this with regard to the initial encounter. Job chapter 1, verse 1. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. Or in Hebrew, it reads, there happened. The verb of being. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. Notice what we are given in the about Job. We read that he was a man who's blameless and upright. So his character is brought before us immediately, very skillfully by the writer. And feared God. The book of Proverbs teaches us that the fear of God, not the dread of God, but the healthy fear of God is the beginning of kachma, of wisdom, the Hebrew word for kachma. And shunned evil. He has seven sons, and three daughters. And he owns 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and he had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. And his wealth is presented to us not in gold or silver, but in livestock, in the animals that he owned. And again, a different system of economics, so therefore a different way of looking at wealth or measuring wealth, as it were. Please note his family. He had seven sons and three daughters, so he had 10 children. Now, in Hebrew, 10 is a particularly rounded number, and it also indicates a sense of real completeness. His sons used to take turns holding a feast, verse 4, in their homes, and they would invite their sisters to eat and to drink with them. When a period of feasting had run its course, Job would send and have them purified. Early in the morning, he would sacrifice a burnt offering or a holocaust offering, that which is consumed and that which is sent, for each of them, thinking, perhaps my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Curse, of course, is the opposite of baraka. Baraka means blessing. Literally, the word baraka or blessing in the Old Testament means to bow the knee. This would be the exact opposite. So the word perhaps is eule. And the word here for send is hata. In Hebrew, it means to miss the mark. And eule, or the word perhaps, is an expression of hope that they had not, or pleading of fear. And then we move, and then we read that this was Job's regular custom. And so, again, the 10 burnt offerings, the Hebrew word is olah, and it means that which ascends, so that it is a recognition of one's need for a Savior. And so Job did this for his own, for his family. Then we move from that portion, and we move into the heavenly court. Verse 6. One day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And let me say at this time that the last book of the Old Testament, book of Malachi, means messenger. And these great spirit beings, powerful spirit beings, have access to the throne room of God and God's court. And Satan is there. And again, his name means adversary or the accuser. So one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming through the earth and going back and forth in it." His words are emphatic. The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." So, in Hebrew, we note that the roaming of the Satan through the earth and going back and forth in it indicates determination and a ceaseless and intense effort. And so there's a purpose to his roaming through the earth and going back and forth in it. He does nothing without a plan, as it were. Everything that he does, that is to say, that has a particular purpose. Nothing is random. Everything has a purpose in what he does. And so the emphasis here is on his ceaseless determination and intense effort. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." And so also please note that Satan's name appears seven times in the first chapter, indicating the fullness of his nefarious or evil presence. Now, notice the reply that the Satan gives to God in verse 9. Notice this reply. "Does Job fear God for nothing?" Satan replied. Interesting, is it not? Whenever he speaks, every statement is weighed with an intense negativism toward God. And the statements are also open-ended in a manner of speaking. They are very powerful. And for the artless who attempt to answer what the questions he poses, the artless ones do not understand what is being asked. And so there may be an intellectual that the person thinks he or she has a hold or has grasped the statement, but the full intensity of the statement, its sweeping nature, its powerful hidden accusation and intent, no, it has not been fully grasped. And so his statements are a cunning trap, as it were. And so it takes skill, it takes training to be aware of this type of questioning and what it does. And here is an interrogation. But you have to look at it and think about this, the statement, the way it is presented, the way it is given. Is an accusation and an interrogation. Does Job fear God for nothing? Satan replied, "Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands, and so his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." So, the very godliness of Job and the way God views Job is questioned, and the enemy wants to shatter that relationship. He wants to put Job to the test in order to show that Job's faith is merely selfish. And it is self-serving. And so God should allow, from the viewpoint of the enemy, Job to be interrogated as to the veracity of his faith. Notice in verse 11, "But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." Very interesting. Very powerful. Very challenging. In our next show, on our next show, we're going to look somewhat in depth at what is going on here in Job. We're going to look at the subtle of the adversary. We're going to look at Job's belief structure and who he was. And we're going to be introduced to Job's therapist, theologian, friend, and the premises that they bring from each school of thought into Job's situation. And Job is going to be assailed from each of the psychotherapists, theological school, and we should see how Job will answer his friend under their interrogation. And so a lot is going on in the book of Job, a lot that we do not dare miss because of the genius of this book. Please join me on my next show, and we will take a deeper look into Job for our edification, that is, to build us up in the faith once we're all getting to the saints. I'm your host, Dr. Josiah Ritz. Next time on the Net Talk. Have a wonderful day.